When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Thanks, everybody.
The Bears.
You're listening to the best of the Bears.
He's in for the touchdown. And the Chicago Bears have taken the lead.
A weekly mix of 670 The Score's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
I was special teaming it up all during the week.
Patrick Manily.
My all-time favorite Bear would have to be Patrick Manily.
Bears long snapper for 16 seasons.
Pat Manily, the long snapper, Maynard, put it in position, and Robbie Gould sends the Bears to the NFC Championship game.
The longest tenured player in Chicago Bears history.
One of the things I immediately missed the most was the legend Dean Pope's office. Olin Krutz, Roberto Garza, Patrick Manily. We never talk football. We talk trash.
Craft Beer Mogul.
Are you drinking the Kool-Aid?
I'm drinking a long snapper IPA.
Patrick Manily.
A long day of watching football with Olin Krutz and Pat Manily. Can't wait, guys.
I was thinking you should just do this show solo. You've already done two, right, this week? So just finish off your week on another solo
I
show.
I need some help, guys.
Well, since you had to turn his mic. Maybe he needs a little help. Maybe he's a little bit of a rookie mistake on a remote.
Was on. Pat decided to let
that's a good teammate
hand.
There. That's yeah, teammateship
that's
right there.
That's a piccolo
yeah.
right there.
That's a piccolo award. Yeah, that's yeah. a
piccolo award. Right
Olin throwing me under the bus in this 902.
Teammateship.
Patrick Manily with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Patrick Manily has been working through the problems of what happened against Green Bay since the moments before the kick. I was trying to explain to them, Patrick, how you were standing there, arms folded, in front of the giant TV at Wonderverse. You go over to Olin and you go, yeah, so the left side has been pretty weak for the Bears before the kick happens.
Mm-hmm.
Then the kick happens and it's blocked, and it's because the left side of the line got blowed up on the play, and you and Olin just froze and looked at each other like, can you believe this bleep?
Yeah, it's just unfortunate, that whole situation, right? This whole year has little chapters in this whole story of what doesn't look like it's going to be a good ending that are pretty damn bad for Bears and Bears fans. And yeah, unfortunately, that field goal unit, if you want me to get into it, has looked bad the last couple of weeks. I went back after the blocked kick. There was some stuff going on in that game that I went back and looked at the Arizona film when they had Matt Pryor in at guard, and he played left guard and right guard. They moved him to the kick side, and he was just getting blown up, just every time getting blown back. Should have been blocked a couple times in that game. And you heard Matt LaFleur talk after the game, right, that Rich Bisaccia, the special teams coach, said that we're going to block a kick this week. And I guarantee you that was the film he showed to his guys. He said, look, we can get it in this A gap right here. We can get it over number 79. Technique is not great. Step's not great. He's not interlocking his hamstrings behind Scott Daly. Plays very high. And that was the blood in the water. He called blood in the water. That's what a coach will tell you when he sees something on the tape that you can exploit. And that was the blood in the water. And they did when it came down to the game-winning kick.
Wow. So Pat Manily went back and looked at the film from previous games and thinks he knows what Rich Bisaccia was looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Pat, when you've got a kicker with a low trajectory, you know, like this, you as a special teams coordinator, you got to make sure you're buttoned up just in general as a rule. This is because, like, even signing Cairo and giving him the money was an interesting thing because he's not one of these giant legged superstar kickers.
He's accurate as hell,
but he is low trajectory. So I mean, it would seem to me that you got to be even more buttoned up than even a regular special teams unit, and you're saying that they were less.
Yeah, and that's just coaching points, right? You tell the team that. You let the guys know. A lot of times what I had in the past is you would install a field goal, but you would take the O-line or the field goal blocking unit, you'd move them into another room, and the O-line coach or whoever, the assistant, maybe would coach them up, and then you got on to the other stuff. So what I mean by that is you can button it up even more because the kicker's not in that room. So you can be more forward to the O-line or the guys that are blocking up front and say, listen, Cairo hits a little bit lower of a ball. We got to be a little more stout up front, especially when we get these longer kicks. And by the way, when we get to game-winning kicks, and if he's backed up quite a bit, you know, 46 to me was not too far, but if he's backed up 50-plus, you guys almost have to fire out a little bit. You got to make sure you keep their hands down. And they didn't do that. And a lot of that is a little bit, guys, is personnel. They're beat up on the offensive line, right? So you got backups in there. In my opinion, Pryor and Larry Borum, they were the right guards. They're more of your tackle tight end guys. They're your big wide bodies that play a little too high. But do they have a depth problem where they don't have guys that they can put in there? That could be another issue. But if you know going into this situation that Pryor and Borum play a little high, that's where you got to coach them a little bit more. Say, listen, guys, your pad level needs to be down. Your right thigh needs to be behind Scott Daly's hamstring. You got to lock him in better. You can't leave that gap open. Make sure your split's down a little bit more. There's a lot of stuff that goes into it that should have maybe been buttoned up, like you said. But is that because their backups are in? You can say that, but they're also been there a couple years, and I know they've blocked for a bunch of kicks, so they need to be a little bit better.
So what did Matt Eberflus do in terms of the operation that he has defended and the entire thought process in a shocker to no one, he has defended? What did he do wrong, in your opinion, Pat?
Can we get Tanny to play his clip real quick from the press conference today?
Matt, going back to the block field goal, was there any thought of moving the ball to the right hash, considering that's where Cairo likes to kick his extra point?
Yeah, there was not. There was not. We feel good with our decision there.
Sorry.
All right, I'll follow that up. Please. He said there was no thought. Well, listen, that's coaching 101. That is coaching 101. That's egregious that there was no discussion about that. Was there discussion about that? I don't know. We can get into that a little bit. Let me just start with this. That's coaching 101. You start there's a reason why you go to OTAs. There's a reason why you have mini camps. There's a reason why you have training camp. There's a reason why you do situational football. There's a reason why on Thursday you finish the offensive periods every Thursday with a two-minute drill, a different situation. Whether it's, all right, we got 34 seconds, we need a field goal, we got one timeout, let's run the two-minute drill that way so the offense knows and the defense knows. To it being a minute and 34 seconds, we got one timeout, we need a touchdown. You run through that each week. Each week is a different situation. So you've gone over these scenarios two to three to four times throughout the entire offseason and regular season. So when you're doing that, the special teams coach is standing next to the head coach and the OC, and he's asking, should be asking, all right, what's our kick line today with this wind? Because the Halas Hall, it can be windy, so it'll be a different kick line if you're going for the field goal. All right, what hash today would Cairo prefer? That is always discussed. I played 16 years in the NFL, was been fortunate to be on a lot of game-winning kicks, game-missed kicks, game-block kicks, whatever. That is always discussed as soon as you get the ball back. The offensive coordinator should click over to the head coach and OC and say, listen, here's the kick line going north or south, wherever you're going, or in Soldier Field or Dome or whatever it is. If you have time, Cairo prefers it on the right hash. And listen, everybody knows he prefers it on the right hash. Where does he kick his PATs from? Most comfortable?
Every one of them is from the right hash. Every one of them is
most comfortable.
From the right hash.
That's your job. That's your job as a coach to take care of that situation. To me, that is just – I hear it, and I don't understand it. You know, there's a lot of stuff I've talked about, having the book on firing Matt Eberflus, and after this week and hearing what's going on and the miscommunication and or communication that happened or didn't happen, whatever it was, I just don't understand it. I just don't understand it.
It's equally egregious, Patrick, too, because it's not like you had to rush. This wasn't a fire drill field goal where you don't have a timeout.
You had 35 seconds with a timeout.
You had your offensive personnel on the field just standing there.
Yes.
And that whole time that they were just standing there, I am shocked they never thought, at least according to Eberflus, they never thought about it, that Richard Hightower didn't say, hey, let's get Cairo over on the right hash. That could have been the next play that you ran. You could have just moved Caleb over that way.
That happens all the time.
There's a couple things there, though. So if you move Caleb, you've got to move from hash to hash. That's quite a ways. That moves the ball back, right? You could run a wide zone to the right and maybe get it over there, but you could get a few yards tackle back. So I'm not defending them not running another play. I'm just really upset that they say this was not discussed. This, again, is coaching 101, and it should be taken care of during the offseason, during OTAs, training camp, every Thursday. And if he's being honest that it was not discussed, that's bad football. That's bad football coaching. And you know what's going to be bad? Is Richard Hightower tomorrow has to be at the podium and answer these questions.
Man. So Pat, for my own edification, if they threw a 10-yard out pattern and got some more yards to the right side, that would end up with the ball on the right hash. Yes?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, good. Yeah.
That's what I was advocating for.
But
since
hold on,
they were loading
it could
the middle.
Get intercepted. It could get intercepted. Though.
Well, yeah.
No, but Lawrence, what's funny is, you know, when we were doing the post game, I got so mad about the block kick and watching all the mistakes they made up front with protection that I was thinking about trying to run one more play. Now I think about it, I'm like, yes, you run one more play. And you know what's crazy about the NFL? It always shows its head, right? The same weekend, same situation. What do the Chargers do?
They run the ball and they get a touchdown.
Yes. So it always, when you make a bad decision, you're always shown in the NFL when you make a bad decision. That's the way it works.
This texter, Oscar from Aurora, says, I thought we turned the page. Now I'm back to being pissed off.
No, you should be. I'm glad that we turned the page back for a second.
We had to.
Because of Patrick's expertise.
100%.
And him being able to explain to folks like why this was an egregious mistake. And you know what bothers me, Patrick? I don't understand why Matt Eberflus struggles to go, I made a mistake, or we as a coaching staff made a mistake. And I get that one could argue that firing the offensive coordinator is them saying that. But at the podium, it would just be refreshing to go, I got that wrong. We know better. I should have known better. The next time we are in the situation, we're going to give Cairo Santos the opportunity to kick the ball from wherever he wants to kick it.
Or a simpler way to do it is not even saying that. It's just, hey, there are some situations that arise in a football game, and this is one. There are a lot of variables that could have happened in that situation. Listen, I'm saying this is on Monday morning. We talked about him as his coaching staff. We've got this figured out. It's unfortunately we had to make the kick. If we make the kick, it's a different story, but we've talked about these situations. And this will not happen in the future.
So that gets to the broader point to me, because you've done a great job elucidating just how awful this is as yet another data point in the strategic failings.
Mm-hmm.
But we are 4 days removed, and there is no willingness or understanding to say, we messed this up, we'll get this better. It's like the third or fourth different thing just this season alone that he's not willing or understanding to say we messed this up. What I don't know what's worse, like not understanding how you messed it up, or the lack of willingness. I guess not understanding would be worse, but the lack of willingness is bad too, Patrick.
Well, yeah, but this takes me into their offices. This takes me into the coaching room. That if this happened, that they're not talking about this, and I've been 16 years through this, and this is the, like I said, special teams 101 in a 2-minute situation. This is discussed first. Pretty much before the ball snapped, before Caleb takes that first snap coming out from their end zone. It's just, that's the way it should be done. And that says a lot to me of what's going on in this coaching staff. And it speaks, I sat with you in 2014, right?
Yep.
And I took me a while to open up about what I saw and was hearing what was coming from Hallis Hall and Mark Trestman. And, you know, now I've been removed 11 years. And I think I know special teams football. I know situational football pretty well. And if this is truly what's going on, that coaching staff is broken a little bit. They've got some stuff to fix, and that's some bad communication. And the other thing is, guys, during the offseason, players are gone, right? Coaches are in the building. You know what they do? They do situational football. They'll have meetings and go over situations. They break down different situations. How do we handle this? This is what we're going to do. This is what they do when we're not in the building or we're down in the weight room or whatever and we don't have a chance to go out in the field. This is what they do. And I just want to stress, this is special teams 101, and you can't get this right. Or say that there was no communication. I can't get it. I don't understand it.
To be this broken, like Patrick's talking about, in the middle of year three, is an unbelievable embarrassment.
It's an indictment.
And it's bad.
It's just bad. It's really bad to me, guys. That's why I want to come on. I'm glad I got to come on today and do some studying up on this and figuring it out, because it says a lot about the coaching staff. And again, I just want to reiterate this. I feel bad for Coach Hightower having to stand at that podium tomorrow, because I might have blown this up a little bit more. I've had a lot of media people call me, and he's going to have to answer some questions, and we'll see what comes out, because we'll just see what comes out.
It feels like this organization, and I've said this before, just a couple weeks ago, they've decided that showing whatever instability they think it shows when you fire a coach mid-season is worse than the damage you can do by keeping a bad and broken coaching staff during the season. Yeah. Yeah. And I think they're dead wrong on that, Patrick. I think it doesn't show the kind of organizational instability that they seem to be afraid of to get rid of the broken. You're doing damage by having these guys here any longer, aren't you?
If I continue to see that kind of stuff, I'm not saying that decision they're not putting on the right hash. I'm just talking about a communication to open up the fans what should be going on. I think what happened in the Commanders game is worse because he didn't come up there and gave up the 13 yards coaching, the coaching or the player error of Tariq Stevenson. But this screams to me like something's going on in that building that needs to be better communication. And I don't know why it's not there.
And what's wild is that there are all sorts of examples of it as the season has gone on.
Yes.
You have an offensive coordinator that didn't have a first 15, which almost every NFL player that we have talked to past or present was like, that seems weird. Every place else that I've gone, they've had some sort of thing like that. Or the fact that you didn't, that wasn't something that, like you're saying, Patrick, you guys didn't talk about this when you hired the guy.
Well, then here, think about this. Who are the two most important hires he has made or should have made as the head coach for the Chicago Bears since he's been here?
What
position is the most important position in football?
Offensive.
You had a young Justin Fields, right? Yep. You had a young Justin Fields. You had to fire your offensive coordinator for him. You have a first-round pick. First-round pick, the number one pick in the draft. And you had to fire your hire for him after 9 games.
Yep. It's so sad because the human part of this is just really obvious to me on Eberflus. I think we've all known it and either talked right to it or talked around it. He's not secure in himself enough as a head coach to admit when he screws this stuff up. It's like
Lawrence, we talked about it at the post game when his post game press conference. I couldn't tell by his tone that they lost to the Packers.
Yeah, it's like say it for what it is. He keeps talking about this stuff like, oh, no, I believe in it. We're getting there. We can do it. It's like if you're secure in yourself as a leader and as a head coach, then you have no problem calling something out when it doesn't work by the players or calling something out when it doesn't work by you guys. And we play Dan Campbell clips. We play Dan Quinn clips. We play Mike Tomlin clips. We could go grab Ozzie Guillen clips. We could cross sports. Sure. We played Eric Spoelstra last week, man. It's like when you screw something up, you say it. It's like, oh, yeah, and we'll fix that moving forward. You know, we learned. Okay, yeah, next question. Let's move on. It takes a certain amount of base level security that this guy doesn't have, whether he's trying to prove that he's a head coach or prove that he's viable for this job or whatever the hell it is. It's personal insecurity, and it's really unfortunate and kind of sad to watch, frankly.
Well, let's just put it this way. What a coach would tell to me if I'm playing poorly. And Lawrence, remember when Olin said what Lovey would say to him?
Yep, big guy.
But, yep, so that's the same thing. I'm a 16-year alumni of the Chicago Bears, and this is me ranting a little bit that I need more from this organization. I need more from Matt Eberflus. That's just what I want to see, and I'm not seeing it.
I think it's a fair way for you, considering all you've given to the organization, to offer that up. Patrick, this was outstanding, as per usual. Thank you so much for this, and thank you for letting your feelings be known about all of it.
Well, you bet. Let's just see if we can get a damn win.
Thanks, Pat.
Bye, Patrick.
See ya.
It's unbelievable, man. Every week with this staff.
I kind of like angry Patrick.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of fun.
That was angry long snapper energy right there.
Well, we didn't even get into that part. We'll save that one for next week.
I was surprised. I thought maybe he'd make the open.
Well, I played the clip for him right before it came on. That's why he was so angry. He was ready to move on. He's ready to turn the page.
I told you that was about Trey Junkin. Had nothing to do with Pat.
I'm going to call Trey Junkin, send him that too. See how you feel after that.
Don't put my name on it.
No, your voice is on it. We're doing that. When we come back, it's been an interesting rivalry week with the Green Bay Packers. There's another rivalry in sports that we should discuss. We'll do that next here on The Score.
The Bears.
Sort of a newsy day here on the Bernstein and Harris Show. A couple other nuggets for you before we get into some of the Caleb Williams comments from moments ago. One is that the Bulls' Patrick Williams is going to miss tonight's game against the Bucks. He is having some imaging done on the same foot on which he recently had surgery. So he's going to be out.
That's not great.
It's not, although if they can put Matas Buzelis in and just let him have more time on the floor.
He's going to guard Giannis?
It's good. It's just, bottom line, it's good for everything. You're closer to a championship playing Matas Buzelis.
Is anybody really guarding Giannis?
Yeah, I thought Patrick Williams has had some success slowing him down.
Yeah, the key,
that is fair.
The key with Giannis is pick him up early. Don't let him get ahead of steam.
Oh, he gets ahead of steam.
No, downhill player. Downhill player.
The Euro step to Hades, yeah, if you will.
Stand in his way early. And
top of the key.
Be aware. No, that's too late.
Yeah, it's too late. That's two steps. That's two steps.
That is two steps.
No, I'm saying, like, it has to be in the backcourt. You have to get to him.
As he crosses half court, better have him aware that there's someone in front of him not allowing him to go unabated anywhere.
That is
two steps.
Critical. It's not even really. It's a stride and a half if you're talking about the top of the key.
Yeah.
For that dude.
I just always think downhill player, the most downhill player ever.
And the other news is after the Cubs have made this deal for pitcher Eli Morgan, they needed a space on the 40-man roster. And we had identified exactly the guy who could be removed from the 40-man roster, but the Cubs apparently disagreed. Because rather than DFA Nick Madrigal, they've DFA'd Patrick Wisdom.
No.
Oh, the guy that hit home runs?
Yeah, the guy who can actually...
Do they need power?
...hit a home run.
That makes sense.
I already miss him.
Maybe they'll re-sign him.
And I assure you, Nick Madrigal is not going to be on this roster.
No, I think there's a lot of teams who could use Patrick Wisdom's bat, albeit streaky. It's still a bat that provides power.
Hey, guys, there's plenty of cute ways to win baseball games. Who needs home runs?
Well, you just lost one cute way when you lost
Layla, Ray, I know a team across town that could use Patrick Wisdom's services.
They could use everyone's services.
Right. I mean,
I don't care about them.
Oh! Oh, my God!
I care about them, no, doggone it.
All right, Zach.
I do too.
That's probably the right answer.
Uh-oh. Wait a second. I do think Chris Getz probably would like Patrick Wisdom.
I'm trying to tell you. Maybe
there's
a thing.
Maybe there's an introduction to be had.
Everyone
there.
Likes Patrick Wisdom.
Yeah, that's like why Chris team. Getz would like him.
Yeah, but Patrick Wisdom is nice. He's handsome. He's a lively dancer. And what's not to
good
like?
Music taste?
And he can hit bombs. Drop him right there in the, well, I was going to say the 8-hole, but on this team, depending on what it looks like, he could be in the 5-hole. No, I'm not trying to be funny.
I was thinking higher.
Higher than 5?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So Caleb Williams.
Who do they have?
Don't bother.
Don't bother.
You're just going to make Ray mad. He doesn't care about them.
No, not. I mean, not the. I. Okay, yes, I care.
Caleb time.
I don't care either. Stop. Caleb time. He was asked if new offensive coordinator Thomas Brown simplified the offense.
I wouldn't say they simplified it. We didn't reinvent the wheel for those 3 or 4 days that Thomas became, the offense coordinator and play caller. I think the decisiveness, I think all of that came from our meetings and how we're going to do things. I think it came from being able to get play calls in faster and being able to get up there and not feel like you're rushed or not feel like, you need to hurry up and get the ball snapped and things like that. I think all of these small things, details of routes, details of the blocking, details of the path of running backs and how we're going to do things. I think that led into all of what happened last week. Obviously, we didn't come out with the win, but you know, how we played efficiently and physically. I think that leads into it. So no, they didn't simplify the offense. I think it's still the same. You know, the Tuesdays and Wednesdays and Thursdays are tough practices because it's a bunch of new stuff, a bunch of difficult things, long play calls. We still have some, like even today, we still have some 12 worders to 14 word play calls. So no, nothing's been simplified, but you got to go out there and execute.
When you mentioned Thomas, how do you think he did last week with the game plan in terms of incorporating things that you're really comfortable with? And even maybe did he incorporate even some things that you really liked at USC into the passing game?
No, I mean, I think I've ran a bunch of concepts so far, whether it's high school even to college to now. I think it started in practice with the reps. I think it started with him stringing things together and doing a good job with that and getting everybody into a rhythm and not, you know, necessarily thinking of what's next or anything like that. We kind of had an idea of what's next. And, you know, from there, you go out there, you play, and you play efficient football, and it gives you the best chance to win.
I understand a young quarterback wanting to push back on the idea of simplification. I get that. Like, no. That's not what this is about. This wasn't about simplifying. He was getting the damn call into my headset in time.
It's a referendum on him if it needs to be simplified.
14-word play call.
Well, you can hear him. I mean, the mix on Sunday was pretty clear. Like, I was getting some of the calls. You could pick them up after a while. Like, Tar Heel, for example. There was one time where he said, can't do it, and they took the time out.
Right, but the line calls are different than the play calls, though.
Yeah, that's true.
The play call, like, that's when he's just saying, like, trips right, wide, cross, gabagool, da. You know, there's...
That'd be a great play, actually.
What? Gabagool, da.
Somewhere in there would be some bourbon.
You kind of just look at it like, okay, run it. Ready, break. Okay. But yeah, I get that. Like, no, they're not simplifying anything for me.
Right.
Don't
and
worry about me.
But that's my point, is like, typically... With an audible, there's a lot to audible if you have a big play call, right? So that's kind of where I'm going with that. But I think he doesn't want to admit that anything needs to be simplified. I don't think that's his style.
630 says, I reinvented the wheel, and now my car is a large paperweight.
Oh, man. That's unfortunate.
It's pretty funny.
I didn't know what you... Is it true Latrell Sprewell has a patent on the spinning
rim? How did you not know this?
You're the only one who doesn't know. I guarantee you both of them know.
I knew it.
Sitting on Sprewell? That's V12? Right. Did you know what are we doing?
But he literally has... He has a patent?
Look it up. You're in front of a computer.
Oh, yeah. I guess I could do
that. He's always apparently surprised when I find out information very quickly. I have a computer right in front of me.
How did you do that?
I just looked it up.
Yeah, Latrell Sprewell.
Many people started to mistakenly believe that Latrell Sprewell invented them.
No, not invented. No.
I think he's got the patent, though.
He debuted them on MTV Cribs. I don't think he has a patent.
Did you look up the exact words?
So they're called Sprewells, as rap music included nickname in the lyrics of rap songs. Yeah, I don't think he's got a patent on them.
Oh, my God! I don't care.
Sorry. Okay. That's I
it's definitely an argument from 2002.
This deserves further research because that would have been a hell of a... That's like the...
I'll figure it out.
Mike Nesmith's mother inventing liquid paper that actually turned out to be true. More from Caleb Williams.
Let's get the U.S. Patent Office on the phone right now.
Yes.
No. Yes. Let's not and say we...
Okay.
Yeah.
So Caleb also commented on his... the mental aspect, shall we say, of having a better week after some struggles recently.
The way you played against Green Bay, I'm sure you aim to play even better than that and produce even more than that. But after the three games before that, what did it do for you mentally to just go in and put in a solid game like that?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it did anything for me mentally. I think after the third game, I realized that I can play and I feel good playing. I've said multiple times that regardless of the interceptions in the beginning of the season, that I felt like I was seeing the field well and things like that. And that still stands today. There's going to be rough times, rough patches over, the long, healthy career that I hopefully have. That's not going to change my mindset, and nor is it going to change it now. So been able to have a good game versus or a solid game, I would say, versus you know, a team like that is obviously it goes into practice and the details and all of that, which is everybody talked about, coach and Coach Flus and Thomas and all of them. And so, you know, I think being able to be consistent, you know, throughout the weeks of practice, film, and all of the above, I think it leads into a consistent path. And so I just have to stay on that path and keep going.
Yeah, he's not playing with you with some of this narrative stuff. I didn't sound like he was there for a lot of the angles today that might be there. The angles of, well, there's some newer simplified offense, because now we're getting into some of these Thursday, Friday, Saturday stories, Sunday stories that we're going to see run as people are transitioning toward the next game. He's not seeing it the way people want him to see it, I don't think, which is fine.
It also speaks to a little bit of figuring out maybe who's the one who wants the responsibility. Is it the Bears wanting to trust Caleb Williams with all of this? Or is this Caleb Williams being like, no, I'm going to take all of this on this year?
I hope the answer is it's the Bears wanting to manage his development and not him saying, I want this, I want. Because we talked about blind spots earlier. As a rookie in the NFL, he has enough to deal with without trying to manage his own career. He can manage what his expectations of himself are, given what he's being asked to do. But for him to say, I want more, I want all of this, and seeing how things have actually played out, that would be a bit concerning for me.
I don't know, because it's earned him $10 million before he got in the league. You know, like, I feel like for that process, like, you could say this is what's made me successful so far.
I wonder how he's positioning himself for a likely coaching change, too, for that probability now. Wherever you have the needle, it's more probable than improbable.
I mean, if it's a 0 to 10, the needles are 0 and 10, the far sides. It's at a 9.
Yeah, at the moment, sure. And once Layla gets her 2 wins, it'll be at a 0.
Spiegel and Holmes.
I'm just saying, Lawrence, you were saying some stuff last week, if my memory is correct.
That's why Danny left.
Afternoons on the Score.
They've got some older guys in that secondary. Like, if they blitz and don't get home, there's an opportunity for big play Palooza against the Vikings defense.
I saw Jane's Addiction at Big Play Palooza. I think it was the second one. Ice-T and Body Count were there. It's hot. Susie and the Banshees were supposed to be there, but she had a viral infection, which I think meant that she was on heroin.
I saw Porno for Pirates at Big Play at Palooza.
Brody loves that band.
I saw Poi Dog.
Were they thinking about anything?
They were.
Would you say they were pondering?
I would.
I did.
They were Poi Dog pondering.
I was at that second Lollapalooza. See Ice-T and Body Count and Nine Inch Nails. Oh my God, dude.
I can't remember what. First was 91?
First one, I think, was 91. Yeah, this
Big
was...
Big Play Palooza.
Yeah.
I went my freshman year at DePaul in 93.
Oh, yeah. So that was the one that I missed. Is that Pearl Jam? Is that the one that Pearl Jam was on?
I think so. Like,
yeah.
It was, all I remember was trying to get back to campus.
From Tinley Park at the time, or where was it?
No, it was here. It was in Grant Park. Oh, so maybe it was later.
It must have been
college.
Later. Must have been
was
later.
Was it Cheap Trick? Were they a part of that also? Rod Stewart, maybe?
Well, I'll tell you what. Cheap Trick and Rod Stewart are coming together to the Credit Union One Amphitheater in Tinley Park.
It's nice.
Funny, it's funny you mentioned that, Danny.
It's funny that you mentioned Tinley Park.
Yeah, it's Friday the 8th of August is when that's going to be. You can get tickets at livenation.com. That sounds like a Big Play Palooza to me. If you're caller number 6 later on to 312-540-0670 when you hear this.
Oh, yeah, that was great, Ringo. CCC, AM 1290, FM 107. This is Cheap Trick.
When you hear that, you'll be caller 6 to that number, which I know well and never make a mistake on. Then you'll get free tickets.
Main Stage in 93, Alice in Chains, Primus, Dinosaur Jr., Fishbone, Arrested Development, Front 242, Babes in Toyland, Tool, and Rage Against the Machine.
Damn, that's a lineup.
That was just the main stage.
That's amazing.
We walked back to campus.
From Tinley Park?
No, from downtown. From here. So it had to have been later. Maybe it was 96 that I'm thinking of. But we had to walk because we kept going. Like, we went to the red line.
Oh, yeah. It's,
there's no way.
Oh, dude. But those nights, I had
those
that.
Are great nights.
Oh, man. When getting back to the South Loop from downtown when it's Mexican Independence Night.
Hell
and
yeah.
And there's nowhere to go. Oh, yeah.
I think we walked up Clark. I think that was our route. We were just like, screw it. And we walked back to campus to Clark. But when you're 20, you got all the energy in the world.
Just getting it all done.
You got no responsibilities. You're living in the city for the summer. Things are going great.
Big play palooza.
How old is Thomas Brown as he tries to plan big play palooza? 38 years old for the newly minted offensive coordinator.
I was thinking about this because you were talking about the opportunity that is in front of Thomas Brown. And I agree with you that there is an opportunity in front of him. What I can't figure out is what is it that he's rooting for and what happens if he does well and what's well enough, but not so well that you end up back in the same situation with Matt Eberflus being the head coach. I'm not willing to go as far as you were yesterday with the idea being the offense flourishes, you move on from Eberflus, and hey, maybe Thomas Brown becomes a candidate to be a head coach. I'm not willing to go that far.
Why not?
I just think that that's a hell of a leap for a guy to make. And I know that he's been an assistant head coach under Sean McVay. And I know that in a vacuum, he is someone that is going to get interviewed. And the reason that he might get interviewed is also a point of contention.
Okay. Well, hold on. See, I've been on that as a possibility since the offensive coordinator interview process. When I had the folder presented by Staples of the offensive coordinator candidates, editor's note, it's not presented by Staples. Thomas Brown, because of that head coach grooming process that has been going on, like as a guy who might be possible for that. The personality and his communication style intrigues me as possible head coach material, but it's awfully early to think about that. I do think it's one of the ways that you could keep him if things go really well here over the last several games. It's not the only way, but it's one of the ways that you could keep some stasis without keeping Matt Eberflus, which I don't think anybody really wants.
Yeah, that to me is a bridge too far. The idea of handing someone the opportunity to come coach your team, but you're marrying them to an offensive coordinator. I just don't see a lot of really great candidates feeling like that's going to be okay.
Even defensive head coaching candidates, like leadership guys.
They have their own guy.
That they've wanted to work with forever.
Yeah, right? Like they've had their own guy.
But maybe their guy has a job already and is working somewhere. I hear
maybe.
You.
Maybe. But if you're Mike Vrabel,
yeah,
right? Because that's one of the names that'll pop to mind in this situation. If you're Mike Vrabel, you probably have your offensive coordinator figured out, even if that guy is working, and you say, hey, that guy might be a quarterback's coach or he might be an OC, and you say, if I get this gig, are you coming with me? Most of these guys, like their staff is already in place. It's already in place.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. But not
all of them. And it's not ideal. I know you want to bring in a head coach and let it be nice and clean, but it's already not going to be nice and clean because the head coach will not be somebody who picked Caleb like we've had before when it's Nagy with Mitch, you know, and when it's Eberflus with Justin. But in this case, I don't think there's anybody who's coming here who'll be like, whew, Caleb Williams? I don't want to work with that guy. Like, do you think that thing exists?
No,
I don't think so at all, which is different from the last couple of times.
I don't think that I think people will jump at the opportunity to work with Caleb, but they're going to go, we want our guy to work with Caleb in a very specific way.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I was very encouraged by what Thomas Brown was able to do in a very short window of time. And it sounds like the offense didn't change structure necessarily, but there was an emphasis placed on, hey, get the ball to the playmakers. Run after the catch is fine. We've got guys that can do it. I love that you saw what everyone was good at. That's the strange part about that offense and what makes it frustrating from the weeks where the offense didn't work well. Keenan Allen is really good in those gotta-have-it situations. He's always been that guy. And we saw Caleb go to him in those situations, and it paid dividends. We saw DJ Moore. He's a monster run after catch.
Yeah, he had like 57 yards after the catch in this game, more than double his season total.
Now, I don't want them to have to do that with DJ. I'd like to see him deployed a little bit more down the field, but whatever. We know that Cole Kmet is really good at beating up zone coverages and making that mismatch for the spot in the zone where he can sit down. And Caleb found him on a big play. We know that DeAndre Swift is the guy that's really good at bouncing plays outside and then in space making people miss. They did that. Roshan Johnson is building a profile as your hammer on the inside and the interior runs. I love that whether it happened just because that was the flow of the game or if that was legitimately the plan was to use people as they were intended to be used.
Uh-huh.
Thomas Brown deserves credit for that.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. And you don't want to speed up and think about the end of the season, but you got me thinking about the end of the season in terms of like if things go well. And if it is another new offensive coordinator for Caleb, it doesn't have to mean a complete freak out. If it's a good one and a sensible one, I mean, it's interesting when you think about like what we've learned from this process. I've learned that dynamic with the young quarterback, you better get that personality dynamic right. And they absolutely failed massively in the personality dynamic between Shane Waldron and Caleb Williams. Like, crazy, crazy fail.
But like, how could you?
I don't know, just like deeply not attuned to the personalities after talking a big game and spending so much time with Caleb and like, getting to know him, it's amazing just how bad the fit was. Like that is not the kind of communicator that Caleb needed, and not living on that frequency of intelligence and quickness is one thing, and also just like the firmness. Like I don't think they realized that Caleb needed a good, strong, firm hand, which to me is sort of insane to realize.
Maybe it's not even firm hand though, Speaks, but maybe it is someone who is buttoned up. We're only dealing with what we see on the outside with Shane Waldron. And I want to give that caveat before I say this next thing. I felt like I was watching a guy who didn't understand how to make offense work. And I'm backed up with him not having a first 15.
Yeah.
I'm backed up with him calling plays during games. I'm backed up with him laughing on the sideline. It's one thing for the idea of the firm hand, but it's a lot easier to respect someone who's just buttoned up.
Yeah,
they don't even have to have that type of personality, but you know that they have their bleep together.
Yeah.
And at least for a week, we know that for Thomas Brown. I hope all of it works out, but there is a fear of, well, now we've made the right choice at this position. Therefore, everything stays the same.
These guys, you know, weakness often hires weakness. And we've seen that in this franchise for a long time and a lot of different ways. Weakness does not want strength to come in and outshine it.
Shane, I think he's talking about us. Like, I'm here and now you're here.
Wow.
And he's like, weakness. Like, you're the EP of this show. I come in, you're the EP. And he's like, these two guys are weak. I think that's what just happened right now.
Oh, man.
Man.
I'd hope not, because I'd slap his face.
Oh!
That's what I'm talking about, Jake Paul.
Yeah, but this one's not fixed.
Yeah!
I'm letting him fight.
I looked really good in the training videos, though. Tanny, did you tune into the Netflix doc on my training?
I got to say, I missed that.
Oh, man, it was so good.
Do you remember when you married that woman 12 days after your 4-year-old daughter died?
God, did I do that?
Yeah, you did. Oh. You did.
Oh, that's too bad.
And then that there was weird. The incarceration. Never mind. Yeah. Never mind.
I had a rough go. I had a rough go.
By the way, don't compare yourself to Mike Tyson, because I'll just bring up the bad stuff. I won't bring up the pigeons.
Yeah, I have a lot of pigeons. For the record, you did not break me about anything in the last segment when I froze for a minute in talking about Thanksgiving.
It sounded like we did.
I know. It's not what happened. I just started thinking about my Thanksgiving because I've been thinking about whether to share something and talk about it with you guys.
Not until you're ready.
I'm ready.
Don't worry about sharing things.
I'm ready.
Is it happening today?
Yeah, right now. I'm ready. I'm ready, sir. So we're going to New York.
Okay.
What? You don't want me to?
We should probably break.
All right.
Yeah, we should hold on to this.
Yeah, just hold on to it. Tease it for the next segment. Let's keep as many listeners as we can.
All right. Well, I got it. I need help processing something. Okay.
All right. Well, then we'll give you the help.
Thank you.
We'll also talk about Matt Eberflus if we have time. That's next here on The Score.
This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
I drink a lot of milk, Andrea. A lot of milk. Whole milk, though. Not the candy ass 2% or skim milk.
Yeah, we're talking about Jim Harbaugh, indeed.
His team's 7-3. They would go to the playoffs if the season ended today.
They also take risks in games and stuff.
This team's really good. Maybe you heard a chunk of this when we've been running it in a promo, but this was this morning, just to sort of kick this off. I want you to hear on the Mully and Haw show, Jake Butt obviously is not a neutral party here.
You don't think?
Nah, but he provides sort of a head shaking what if here about if Jim Harbaugh were actually the Bears head coach.
So I don't want to rub it in, but the conversations, the feeling you guys would have waking up on a day-to-day basis if Jim Harbaugh was the coach of the Chicago Bears would be night and day from how you probably feel right now. You're not having a dude fight with the crowd against the Commanders if Jim Harbaugh is the coach. We'll start there. That's not going to happen. The other piece is look at the Chargers game last week. Like, that's There's the fork in the road of who the Chargers were versus who the Chargers are. They were up big. The Bengals come back. And if you're a Chargers fan, you're thinking, oh, my God, here we go again. And then what happens? And I was listening to J.K. Dobbins talk about a clip where he knew the Bengals were going to let him score. And the right thing to do was to slide down, you know, slide down and just let the clock run out. And he asked his center and his coach, and he said, no, they all said, go score. Go score, because communicate to the world that this is not the same old Chargers. That's what Jim does, is he instills belief. I don't know if you guys see the videos from the locker room. Jim instills belief from top down in organizations that you will win, that the page has been turned. More than anything, that's what Jim does.
You know how we had the discussion where we watch teams and sometimes you're like, oh man, why can't the Bears be like that? And Studs
told me I can't do that.
Separates it for himself.
I didn't say you can't do that. I said I don't do that.
Yeah, he separates it for himself. However, when I hear that, I'm like, oh.
Yeah, but those of us who before the fact were saying fire Eberflus and hire Jim Harbaugh, fire all these idiots and hire Jim Harbaugh.
That description is exactly what the Bears want in a head coach.
No, it's what they say they want.
You're right about that.
They say they want it, but they don't. They don't want a disruptor.
They need a disruptor.
I think they're still burned by Ditka. I think the McCaskey family still feels bigfooted by...
Be bigfooted as long as you win. No one cares.
So this is
about ego?
They'll never say it, but I still think that they felt that they were trampled all over by the force of nature that Ditka was, for better or for worse.
That was in 1985. Almost 40 years ago.
But I'm saying even near the end, more so the end of Ditka in 93 is what they're thinking of.
There comes a point in everything, whether this is your job, this is your relationship with either friends,
family, lovers, whatever, where you have to put your ego in check. And you have to ask yourself, do I want what's best for me on a selfish level, or do I want what's best for everyone involved?
I think they've convinced themselves that there's no difference between those two.
They think their comfort is paramount.
What's proper. And even if they don't, it's subconscious. I think they want to win. I don't think they know where their blind spots are. And I don't even think that they know why they would stay away from a coach that has this the powerful leadership. Because essentially, it's the most important aspect is leadership.
The problem is, though, and you know this, you two know this looking at me right now, powerful leadership means you're going to have uncomfortable conversations.
Absolutely.
That they're going to question you.
Absolutely.
You did it with Kevin Warren. You should do it with your football.
I want to be questioned, though. I want to be questioned in every aspect. You know, what's it been, 2 months I've been here? I'm always asking, hey, you guys need me to do anything differently? Do you want something done better? Let me know. I want the feedback because I know I don't know everything. I don't even know what I don't know yet concerning working at this job full time. Now, I've worked in media for 25 years. I've done radio for the better part of 25 years. But when you go into a new situation, you have to be open to understanding what the goals are, how to best achieve the goals, and you have to be receptive to things that might make you uncomfortable.
But think about
that. It's
got to
be okay. I was going to argue the opposite, but actually. I was going to say that the fact that you came in, if you want to continue that metaphor, 2 months ago, that this wasn't a comfortable idea of old, you know, fitting the score DNA. I said, this is great. I said, it's been a while since we've had somebody who was just completely new to what we were doing and wasn't bound by anything that had happened before and wasn't necessarily a trapped by history. I think it's a good thing. I think that if you keep doing you.
I'm gonna be authentic to myself.
I'm saying everybody.
But you two are functioning, and this is a successful show. Like whether or not people want to accept that part, it just is. Our numbers don't lie to us. Yeah, that's why we're here.
But this is what the Bears need. The Bears need an outsider to say, why do you do this way? This isn't good.
Here's the thing, though: is you're saying that you seek feedback and you seek some sort of
and there's a difference between
partnership.
Seeking feedback and seeking validation.
Right.
I don't seek validation.
I'm not, but let me finish, though.
Go ahead, sorry.
In you talking about your process, the thing is you're still confident in what you say, and you say it with authority. And that's the part that bothers people like them.
Is
you
people
get
saying
me?
Things with authority?
Like, your actions matter to me, and they matter to Dan, and they matter to people who have been at many places professionally. But I'm telling you right now, because of the other part, that's the part that makes other people feel uncomfortable.
And the Bears will say,
and they might
they
just might not like that person. And they just don't know why, because they can't quantify the gut feeling thing. And then what's funny is you hear somebody like Jake Butt illustrate exactly what they say they want in a coach and an executive, but they can't get past themselves to be able to do it.
And here's more. Adam Schefter and Kevin Clark on the This Is Football podcast really got into the impact that Harbaugh himself has had and why.
Well, I think with Jim, there's a few things too that I think the timing had to be right with him. Yeah. First and foremost, he had to be ready to leave, and he hadn't done everything that he wanted to do at Michigan, which is go win. He wanted to beat Ohio State. He wanted to win a Big Ten championship. He wanted to win a national championship. Yeah. He wanted to do all these things like that. And I think that, not that he couldn't have gone to the NFL sooner, he certainly could have, but I think he was waiting for the timing to be right. And now that he had accomplished everything that he wanted to, that he set out to do, then he was able to go ahead and leave for the NFL. Now, the interesting thing is, if we go back to last offseason, the only two natural landing spots, the two places that really were in play for him, it was the Chargers, and it was up to them to close the deal. Yeah. If they hadn't closed the deal, then he would have gone on and visited Atlanta. And Atlanta was a place that appealed to him, but Atlanta moved in on Bill Belichick and then changed course and decided to go with Raheem Morris. So I don't know that Jim Harbaugh ever – wound up becoming a serious candidate in the end, a finalist for that job when clearly he should have been. And the truth of the matter is, to the Chargers' credit, they didn't let him out of the building. He went there and they got the deal done. And he is the anti-Charger figure. Like, 100%. If we think back to what the Chargers over the years have been, they have been soft. They have been unclutch. They have been injury prone. They have been underachieving. Am I right? Like,
yes. When you think of Chargers,
those are all the things that they've been over time. And when you think of Jim Harbaugh, you think of consistency, toughness, maximizing potential, overachieving, not underachieving, playing hurt, playing tough, being smart, loving football, like all the things that organization wasn't, he is. And 100%. Now he's brought all those things very quickly and transformed the culture of that organization almost overnight to where now I think the Chargers are one of the toughest teams in football.
I completely agree.
I think they're one of the most underrated teams. Nobody's paying attention because we're so conditioned to thinking of the Chargers as this soft, underachieving team. But it may be different this year.
It's amazing you mentioned the Chargers being everything this year that they're not normally, because the history of that franchise is having talent and not getting it across the finish line because you wasted it. And no one maximizes talent like Jim Harbaugh. Nobody made – I think we've had revisionist history. It was not like we were looking at that 49ers team and saying, oh, this is a sleeping giant. No, no, no. He developed those guys. He made them tougher. Again, I already said that about Michigan. But, like, we're taking – obviously, they have Justin Herbert. Obviously, they've got the names you know. But everybody thought they were going to take a step back because of the cap hell they were in, all that stuff. No, no, no. They're taking a bunch of young guys and they're making them better. If I may tell a story about Jim Harbaugh, owners meeting 2013, I want to say, we're in Phoenix. And Kenny Williams, who is the White Sox GM at the time, is at the bar. You know, as you know, lots of baseball people live at that resort in Arizona during spring training. So you'd see Clayton Kershaw, you'd see a bunch of people just in the lobby all the time because they've got a lot of money and they can live in a nice resort. Must be nice. But Kenny Williams is one of those people, the White Sox GM. And we're sitting there, and I think we were next to each other, and I knew who he was, and shook up a conversation there. At the end, he says, hey, is Jim Harbaugh here? Because, you know, he knew what I was doing there, and I said, yeah. And he goes, do you know where I could find him? And I said, no, but I'll find Bob Lang or somebody, and we can connect. And I said, well, why do you ask? And he said, oh, I didn't mention this, but it's always something I wanted to do, which is that my son was on the 49ers, and he was the one that muffed the punts in the NFC Championship game.
Oh, wow.
And he said that he wanted to thank Jim Harbaugh. I almost get emotional thinking about this now that I'm a parent. He said he wanted to thank Jim Harbaugh because when nobody loved his son, Jim Harbaugh did. And the love that Jim Harbaugh showed his son and the compassion when everybody was mad at him, he wanted to, as a man, father to father, thank him. And I'm not sure I've ever heard a better story about how to coach a team after a loss. And there's a reason the next year they were able to get to the Super Bowl. There's a reason, you know, like you just hear those stories and you go, oh, okay, this makes sense.
Man, listen.
Everything they say they want.
Just say I was right. Just
I never said you were wrong.
That's 5 minutes of saying Bernstein was right, that they should have blown out all these coaches and backed up the truck and signed a blank contract for Jim Harbaugh.
Here's does that mean he would have taken it, though?
But a blank contract?
Yeah, there is a piece where he doesn't want to work for this team.
I just want to know they tried.
But yeah, it's not unlike the Juan Soto Cubs thing. You just want to know a conversation was had.
I want to know that they realized what they needed.
But Dan, let me just stop real quick, because the conversation had been about us not knowing whether or not they would eat the contract of Matt Eberflus next year, right?
Right.
This all kind of makes more sense if that fifth year exists, that at the end of the last year, they definitely were going to eat 2 years worth of Matt Eberflus' contract.
That's
do you hear what I'm saying?
Yeah, but you talk about letting – it's a sunk cost. You talk about letting, you know, the one thing beat you twice, letting one thing beat you three times,
so
letting one loss beat you four times.
Sold.
Keeps going, right?
It is really frustrating, though, when you hear those examples, because if you do ask for feedback, like you talk about in a meeting, you ask for examples. Yeah, how could I be better? Give me an example. And then you hear that. Then you hear those two things.
Leadership, 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 expectations.
But that means that they would be questioned footprint. As well.
The difference between a heavyweight and a lightweight. That's the difference between a heavyweight and a lightweight.
And the funny part is, who's on his staff?
All kinds of jamokes.
Trust me.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's okay.
That's the point.
You can have Mark Trussman.
I haven't heard any of that. I didn't hear all of it. I heard a lot about most of it, but what I did hear, I did not hear any of that.
But he's bad at being in charge of things because he's a lightweight. Lightweights are assistants. Lightweights are assistants. It's a perfect spot for lightweights. The Bears can't figure that out.
The only person who doesn't fit this example is Vic Fangio, who might be too much of a heavyweight overall.
No, Vic Fangio just isn't a leader. That's another Vic Fangio, nice guy, good football coach, but again, he's not a leader.
Difference maker to a team's success.
Oh, absolutely. But I think he knows what he is now. I mean, obviously you take the job if offered. He interviewed for it, he got it, but I never thought it fit him. I never thought it was good that he was one of just sort of made of that kind of head coaching timber.
I don't know about head coaching timber because I think certain people deserve a chance and you just have to make the best selection of whoever is available to make that work. And a lot of times teams get it wrong. I mean, more times than not, teams get it wrong because the goal for all these, the goals for all these teams should be winning a championship, playing championship level football. And we see more turnover now than ever because you're giving less and less time to construct a championship team.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score. We are joined by Odyssey NFL insider Brian Baldinger, host of the Best Football Show podcast, Insider Calls, brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day be delicious. And Baldy joins us on the Aturo hotline, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
I'm good, guys. It's good to be with you.
Well, we always love
to kick off week 12 here. I'm in good shape here, guys.
Well,
good.
We're still reeling. Today, the special teams coordinator will speak at Hallis Hall. We haven't heard from him since the fouled field goal at the end of the horrible game against Green Bay. That is their biggest rival. That is 11 in a row for Green Bay against the Bears, and they block a field goal to do that. And Brian, I'm sure you've seen it, and I know you know what's supposed to be done on a field goal. We've been talking to various people about it, and Patrick Manley, the great long snapper for many years with the Bears, was saying that the attitude you have to have on that last play is to understand that it's almost like the difference between a regular season and a playoff situation, that when you get into a game-winning field goal, you know they're going to do everything humanly possible to block it, and you got to hold up no matter what, and you can't just surrender the A-gap.
I totally agree with Patrick, and I said the same thing. You know the only way Green Bay can really win this game is if they block the field goal. You know as a field goal protecting unit, you're going to get their very best rush. And to Patrick's point, it's a totally different rush than it is on an extra point in the first quarter or a chip shot field goal in the second quarter. You're not getting the block to win a game. When there's no time left on the clock or 30 seconds left, whatever it was, you're going to get their very best effort. And so you have to protect inside out. And everybody does, all across, starting with the guards, to the tackles, to the ends, to the wing. You always protect inside first, outside. And you got to be as strong as you possibly can on the inside. And they weren't. It's the same thing that happened the week before when Denver had their field goal blocked on an over-road block by Kansas City. It's the exact same thing. And you would think, if I was a special teams coach, I'd put those plays up there for my team to watch every week. The plays that get you beat. Because at the start of the season, You want to win two games because of your special teams. You definitely don't want to lose two games because of it. And the Bears just lost a game because of a simple protection.
In your view, you saw Larry Borum, you saw Matt Pryor, you saw Scott Daly get overwhelmed. But in your view, was it more of them getting beaten like they did or the low trajectory of the kick from Cairo Santos?
You never know about the kick. It did look low, but at the same time, I mean, I put it on the guys you just mentioned. I mean, they're the guys responsible. They got run over in the middle. They probably did some things to the center you're not allowed to do. You know, that stuff happens. But, you know, that's Larry's job inside. It starts there at the guard, and you got to be strong. You got to be strong at the point. There's ways to hold the water, to hold your center of gravity, to keep it down and not get blown out like they did.
Brian, when in your career, were you on special teams?
Yeah.
You've always been there and done this.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know this.
No, honestly, like, you know, nobody tries to block a field goal in practice in the offseason, but you practice this stuff every day. You have your special team drills every day, and you walk through it, and you rehearse situations, overloads, middle blocks. Yeah, guys like Miles Garrett that jump over offensive lines and block kicks like he did this year. Like, you rehearse all that stuff, and you watch it. You put those plays up on the screen, and you study it in your meetings. And so when the time comes, like the time came, to go win the, you know, to win the game against Green Bay, you're not in that predicament.
Insider calls are brought to you by Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellmann's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes every football season. So, Brian, you're very familiar with the Bears' offense under Shane Waldron. Thomas Brown got his shot, seemed more efficient, seems to be things were a little bit more balanced, certainly. What was the biggest change in your view?
Well, I think they got the ball out faster. You know, I think DJ had, you know, caught all six or seven passes they threw to him. They weren't deep down the field. They were more short passes. And so they got a lot more completions, higher completion percentage throws. I thought that was the big thing. They didn't, you know, but, you know, to their demise, they didn't take deep shots and they didn't try to get explosive plays. And, you know, I think there's a balance there between getting your completions and getting your explosive plays in the offense.
I want to get back to the field goal thing for just one last question, which is, and we've had a long conversation about this. The game is, you know, they have to convert a fourth down to get effectively into field goal range, and they do so, and then you run a play, and the running back dives forward. Looked like he might have gotten stopped. Then he dives forward. You get a couple yards, and then the coach is satisfied. It's going to be a 46, 47-yard field goal, and that's it, and you let the clock run out, and you stop it with 3 seconds left, and you kick. And watching it live, I'm not second-guessing anything. I first-guessed it.
No, second-guess it.
Don't you have to? It's second down. Don't you have to get as close as humanly possible? Don't you have to run a play there? You could even run two. But I get the fear factor and all that. Why be satisfied with that long a field goal?
Why be scared?
Well, here's the thing. The exact same situation happened in Los Angeles with the Chargers against Cincinnati this past weekend, where they get the ball with 45 seconds to go, 27-27 game. They get two explosive plays. They're down to the 26-yard line. And they could have kicked the field goal. They could have done exactly what the Bears did. And Harbaugh lined up, I formation, J.K. Dobbins ran it in for a touchdown. Game over. Never kicked a field goal. Never lined up for it. I think you have to get as close as you can. And even if you're going to run the way they did, why run to the hash? Why not put it in the middle of the field? Like, the play didn't make any sense to me. Like, if you're going to run it, presumably you want to put the ball in the middle of the field, have the best view of the uprights. I didn't like the play, and I didn't like the fact that they ran the clock down to three and didn't trust them to run another play. Because who knows? I'm not going to throw the ball in that situation, but I'm going to run it again. Who knows if you get a split, you break a tackle, and you get 10 yards closer. You won't never know unless you run that play. I would have run another play.
This segment with Brian Baldinger is brought to you by TimberTech Decking and Railing. Everything wood should be. Visit TimberTech.com. Brian, when you watch the Bears defense on tape, what do you see from Montez Sweat? And is there a reasonable explanation why he only has 3.5 sacks through 10 games?
Well, he's not winning one-on-ones. He's not, you know, he's not crushing the pocket the way we saw him do a year ago with any regularity. He doesn't look right to me. I don't know if the injury status or what he's playing with right now, but he doesn't look right. And the pass rush is non-existent right now. And he was the focal point last year. You know, Dexter inside, him outside. You know, and then when they do try to blitz, like they did on the big pass play to Christian Watson, the blitzes don't make any sense. Like, there's no disguise to any of it. Both linebackers came. Both linebackers were easily picked up. There was no pressure on Jordan Love at all. So if you're going to compensate for the lack of pass rush, at least be a little creative in your pass rush.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they're losing on both sides of the line of scrimmage, and it's really hard to win football games when that happens. And I know they've been beaten up on the offensive line, and maybe you're right. Maybe it is the shin slash ankle that is felling Montez Sweat. But the reality is, and Billings is out, and they don't have another player like him. But they are losing the line of scrimmage, and it's how you end up with a 4-game losing streak.
Yeah, no, the games are won in the trenches, flat out. And, you know, the quarterback has to play error-free, and he's got to make big plays. You know, Jordan Love got the big plays to Christian Watson, and the one down the field. I mean, he's double-covered. They just don't play the ball in the air very well. But they won on two big plays. I mean, that's how they won the game. And so the Bears aren't getting those plays. And then, you know, they're not winning in the trenches. And that's why you lose games. And so you got to be deep. And you got to be talented in the trenches. And if you look at them versus other teams that have winning records right now, you would say that that's the biggest difference between the Bears and other teams, whether it's Detroit or Minnesota, or pick a team right now. The Eagles, I mean, they're not as good in the trenches as they need to be right now.
Well, Brian, the Vikings lead the NFL in interceptions with 16. And yesterday, Caleb Williams called Brian Flores the king of the zero blitz. So you know they're going to come after the rookie quarterback. What do you expect from the Bears in response to that? And in some odd way, could that make Caleb Williams more dangerous as a runner if they come at him with all the blitzes?
Well, you know, obviously he's pretty skilled at that. Brian Flores does a whole lot more than just zero blitz. I mean, they broke the protections down of Tennessee repeatedly last week, where Will Levis didn't have a chance. And the offensive line were sitting there like having a coffee clutch trying to figure out what they just did wrong. Like, he is it's a game of three card Monty. You don't know where the dice is right now. And he's excellent at it. And then they've got extremely versatile players. You know, Andrew Van Ginkle can line up anywhere. Josh Metellus can line up anywhere. You're not really sure how to account for some of these guys. Pat Jones lines up everywhere. Blake Cashman lines up everywhere. And then they've got corners that he trusts, whether it's Stephon Gilmore, who, you know, was the defensive player of the year for him in New England years ago, or whether it's, you know, Byron Murphy Jr. Like, these guys can line up and play man coverage. So the quarterback and the offensive line and the protections of Thomas Brown are going to be challenged. And it's not just third downs. They will challenge protections from anywhere on the field. It's one of the reasons why they have 16 interceptions. Quarterbacks are throwing the ball up for grabs under pressure. So you have to be aggressive, but you can't turn it over. It's a difficult conundrum, and it's one of the reasons why they have the record that they have right now.
You know, you said it well about what happened last week, and even just you're not throwing the ball down the field. The Bears haven't been doing that. And I'm wondering, you know, Caleb is doing a good job of not throwing picks, but it's almost like they're turning him into a game manager. You can't be afraid to throw a pick. You've got to take a shot down the field. In a game like this, would it be the worst thing if he threw a pick? I'm not saying you're looking to do that, but if you got to go down the field. It just feels like they're so limited in the way they're attacking teams.
Well, I agree, but, you know, the rules are made for it. You know, I mean, Stephon Gilmore is not what he was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So you got to, you know, he's guilty of defensive pass interference calls. So is, like, if you don't throw the ball down the field, you're never getting one of those plays. And the only way you get those is if you attack. And I would say that Patrick Mahomes, he might lead the league in interceptions right now. He could care less. He's always going to attack. And so that's one of the reasons why he's got three Super Bowls. He has no fear in attacking and throwing the ball and giving his receivers a chance. It looks like he's most comfortable throwing the ball down the field to Rome. So, I mean, I dial up a couple max protections and take my chances and take my shots. They're very good in the back end. Harrison Smith's been around a long, long time.
Yep.
I think he's got 35 or 36 career interceptions. Cade Bynum is a very good safety. But they'll play three deep coverages. Like, their coverages are, if you had to just script them and all the different things that they do, you'd run out of paper. Like, they give you a lot of looks. And so, you know, you hope, honestly, that you can run the ball really well up front and stay out of some of those situations.
Great stuff, Brian. Appreciate the time
this
morning.
Thanks, Brian.
Yep, you bet, guys. Take care. Talk to you next week.
That is our guy, Brian Baldinger. He is an Odyssey NFL insider, the host of the Best Football Show podcast and Insider Calls, brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious.
Report with Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs. Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Brad Biggs, the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to the station and a valued friend. And he joins us now on the Score Hotline, brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Big Zay!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, you know, the draft is coming tomorrow, and we heard Ian Cunningham take some questions. I don't know if he made any definitive statements, but he did take some questions. What is your takeaway of anything from that particular interview?
Well, he's ready to be a general manager. I mean, he's polished. He is capable of sitting there for 15 minutes, handing out some thank yous, and then saying literally nothing, which you don't expect the guy to shed a whole lot of light on anything, but they ran out the assistant GM Ian Cunningham yesterday. Ryan Poles did not speak. And, you know, I don't know that we learned any less than we would have otherwise. It seems like a process that, you know, basically all it does is hype the draft, because you really don't get any useful information at all, to be totally honest with you. So he's set to be a GM.
Did he hesitate at all when asked about Bijan Robinson? Is that a little bit of a tell, or is that reading too much into it? Because that would definitely be a surprise at nine.
They can't draft a running back. Unless Bijan Robinson can also rush the passer. I think he maybe hesitated because there's just the positional value just doesn't add up with the running back position. And I don't, you know, like, I've talked to people who think that the Falcons will take Bijan Robinson at 8. And then I've spoken to other people who believe that, like, there's this, all the teams out there love the Bijan hype because go ahead and take a running back that high. That there are some that believe he'll fall, you know, into the 20s. So we'll have to see. But I cannot see the Bears drafting a running back in round one. This is a really good draft for running backs. Like, it's deep. Dave, they led the league in rushing last year with David Montgomery and Khalil Herbert sharing the load with Justin Fields.
It's fascinating to think that there was not a running back taken in the draft last year in the first round, but potentially, whether it's Bijan Robinson going, fairly high, but Jahmyr Gibbs, the Alabama running back, could also sneak into the first round. Do you believe that we've seen the last of first round running backs, or Do you believe there could be two in this draft?
I in my mock draft, to do something a little different, put Gibbs to the Philadelphia Eagles. You know, they got a lot of production out of Miles Sanders this past season. I don't know that they were particularly thrilled with Sanders. They didn't re-sign him. And I think Gibbs is a guy who could give him more versatility in what he can do than Sanders did. He's probably better between the tackles than Sanders was. And Philadelphia is, I mean, that's a roster that's pretty well constructed right now. So, you know, because people have talked about Bijan to the Eagles at 10, and I just think that I just don't see Howie Roseman doing that. But a running back there at the back end where they've got another pick, that's, I guess it's a possibility if he feels like some guys at some other positions are, you know, gone. The Eagles do a really good job of collecting two positions, offensive linemen and defensive linemen. So I would be looking at those two positions with their first pick, possibility of a cornerback, but he usually likes to stay in the trenches.
So, Brad, if you're not getting much from Ian Cunningham as expected, and we didn't hear from Ryan Poles and won't, what are you hearing from around the league about the Bears' state of mind going into this draft or who they might like? You see different things. It is lying season. But what are you hearing?
Well, it sounds like there's a, according to some people out there, there's a really good chance Jalen Carter's available at number 9. Now, others aren't as convinced of that. But if he's available at 9, I think I mentioned this when we spoke last week, that means a couple teams have basically removed him from their draft board, right? Like, how does he get to 9? How does he get past Detroit and Seattle? Especially if Seattle's not taking a quarterback, then how did he get there? Well, he probably had some teams take him off the board. So, you know, Houston's in a bit of a jam right now. I think the Texans would love to trade that pick. I think everybody knows that they seem unlikely to take a quarterback at 2. Makes it a little bit more difficult to trade the pick. Arizona's not taking a quarterback. Would make it a little bit more difficult for the Cardinals to trade the pick. We could see some movement there. Or, you know, the Colts could be sitting at 4 and get their second pick of quarterbacks. So we just... where are these quarterbacks going to go? That's what's really interesting to me, because obviously the more that go in the top 8, the better for the Chicago Bears. It pushes more non-quarterbacks down to them. But if Carter's there, it will be interesting, because I think the Bears then can choose between Jalen Carter or, you know, an offensive lineman. There's some people saying now that an offensive tackle could go 3 to Arizona, and I look at it and I'm like, is there an offensive lineman in this draft worthy of going 3rd overall? I'm not sure.
The idea that you have as many needs as you do with the Bears, and they can address them basically in their first 3 picks of the draft, right? They can get one guy on the offensive defensive line at 9 and then come back and grab a couple more before they start getting into the corner position. Is that realistic? Do you think that they'll be, I mean, if you don't get the 3 technique early, you're not going to get him. You're going to be settling on in different positions, but there are edge guys throughout the draft. What about the offensive line? That falls off the ledge pretty early too.
Yeah, it's not a great draft for offensive linemen, but you can find guys with traits that you like, and they did that a year ago with Braxton Jones. You're right, if you don't strike early with the 3 technique, and one player to keep an eye on would be Kalijah Kancey out of Pitt. He's got shorter arms. He's not super big, but he's the kind of guy that potentially could have his name called at the end of round 1. Or maybe first half of round 2, and that's that's kind of no man's land for the Bears right now. They pick at 9, and they don't pick again until 53. So if they start making some moves Thursday night or Friday, then potentially they could be in play for a guy like that. Yeah, if you address the three technique early, I think you can check those other boxes, Molly. We just have to see, you know, what happens with Jalen Carter. And some people say, well, you know, you're not looking to draft choir boys. And I completely understand that, and I agree with that. What you can't compromise on, though, is because when you hear character, I think everyone just assumes, you know, is he a good citizen? Is he a good teammate? That kind of thing. Character also involves football character, and that's these teams trying to determine, you know, how important playing football is to the guy. How much does he love the game? And when you have questions, or if you have questions about that, I should say, then you've got to dig deep and do some soul searching to figure out what direction you want to go.
All right, Brad, so there are a lot of things that we aren't sure about, one of them being the Jalen Carter conundrum at number 9, the other one being how high the offensive lineman may go and if it's worthwhile to take somebody, you know, at 3, as you just pointed out. A lot of things we aren't sure about. What are you the most certain about this draft or this draft class in the first round?
Boy, that's a great question, because it's just like you look at this, and if you just look at it by position, right, and just stack it up by position, how many of these positions have a guy that is head and shoulders above the rest of the dudes at the position? Like, clear-cut top offensive lineman. I don't think that guy exists this year. Mm-mm. There's a clear-cut running back. It's Bijan Robinson. Clear-cut quarterback. I think most people think Bryce Young's going to go 1, but there's a ton of questions about the size, right? So just, I think when you say, who's the definitive guy at this position, there's so many question marks that makes this top half a round 1 a total mystery. Like, I don't think anybody knows which direction it's going to go. If you ask me, you know, what am I sure is going to happen Thursday night? I think you'll see the corners go early, and that's not some kind of revelation. That happens every year. If you want to get a quality cornerback, you probably got to strike in round 1. You could see 5 cornerbacks for sure drafted in round 1, I think.
Brad, we haven't talked to you since the Rodgers trade. Obviously, he's out of the division now. The Packers will have more fuel. They pick 13th rather than 15th in this draft. What if anything, are you expecting? You know, certainly the Lions should have a monster draft. They've got a couple first-round picks. What are you expecting from the division, and how will you how will you evaluate Green Bay without the quarterback?
Well, we've just got to kind of wait and see what Jordan Love can do. What are the Packers going to do at 13? Do they get him a wide receiver, which they never really wanted to take in round 1 when Rodgers was there? Do they go tight end, or do they beef up the offensive line and the protection for him a little bit? Not only do the Lions have 2 first-round picks, Detroit owns 2 second-round picks. I believe Detroit's picking 4 times in the top 55, I think it is. So the Lions should be able to get a good football player, and they obviously pick high with that Rams selection. It should be a strong draft for them. Minnesota, I think the question there is, what do they do in round 1? That was a football team that I don't think was as talented as the record showed a year ago, right? What they went 13 football games, and they've got some older guys, so they got to figure out how they want to retool that. Is that a spot for them to take a shot at a quarterback of the future, maybe Hendon Hooker of Tennessee, as he comes off that ACL injury suffered last fall?
So, Brad, let's talk about Tyree Wilson for a moment. I have seen him mock drafts. He's been mocked as high as 3rd, I believe, and as low as 20. I think we talked to Pro Football Focus yesterday a lot of range because of the ankle fracture, the surgery, and having the screw removed. And now maybe he has some clean medicals. Maybe we don't know exactly what that information is. What are you hearing about Tyree Wilson, and how likely would he be to drop to number 9?
Yeah, I talked to some people about him yesterday, and everybody's going to have probably slightly different information, but it sounds like the people I talked to yesterday, there are not concerns for them about Tyree Wilson, that's a go there for him. That's a green light for Tyree Wilson. And so I could see him, if teams don't have concerns about that, he's going in the top 5 anyway, right? I don't think he would get there to 9. I mean, this is kind of a different guy because he's so big, 6'6", 270 or so, really powerful. He can move. I think he's got the versatility to do a couple different things for you up front on the defensive line. He's a guy that could be a real difference maker if you believe in the medical. And I think the medical is going to turn out to be okay for him. That's based on what I gathered here recently.
Just to close the loop, the Lions have picks number 6, 18, 48, and 55.
And then in the top 53.
And they pick again at 81 in the third round. That's a lot of pretty high picks. The Bears, that pick number 64 should be a really good pick for them. So that's the first pick on Saturday. And, that is a really good way to kind of go overnight, look at what's left, see who's top of your board. And if you don't have someone you want to take there, teams would love to move in after they've got a couple rounds under their belt and they know what their main need is.
Yeah, that's one of those hot picks where those first 3 or 4 picks of day 3 can generate considerable interest from teams that see a guy that they thought there was no chance that where that guy was on their board that he'd be available and they want to make a move. So you could potentially cash in with a trade down there. I think it's going to be interesting to see if the Bears do anything that kind of bridge that gap that I mentioned earlier, where they pick at 9 and then it's a long wait. Yep. Until they are back on the clock again. And the easy solution, of course, that people mention is, well, you trade down from 9. You've got to have a trade partner. It's got to be compensation that is fair for you. And then you got to be comfortable moving down. Remember, this is a 3-14 football team that had the number 1 pick and could certainly use the number 1 pick, right? And the further down you trade, the lower the chances, in theory anyway, are that you get an impact football player, and the Bears need multiple impact football players.
Brad, if I would have answered the question I asked you, I would have said Will Anderson is going to be the cleanest player in this draft and the smartest pick by whoever gets him in the top 5, presumably. Who's the second best edge rusher in this draft, if you agree that Will Anderson is the first?
Well, if he goes top 5, it's Tyree Wilson. I think that's what people are leaning towards. A guy that's been hot for a while now is Nolan Smith, out of Georgia, and he's a little bit undersized, super productive. I think you project him, and you hope that you get Hassan Reddick, who had 16 sacks for the Philadelphia Eagles this past season. He coming out earlier in his career, he's playing a little bit of linebacker. They have figured out how to put his skill set to use because he's not real big either. But Nolan Smith's a guy that he could certainly have his name called in the top 10. And in the Eagles, I actually mocked him to the Eagles. Like, they've got Hassan Reddick, like, bring in a guy who learned from him from a little bit. They can work together, and then you just move on. But Miles Murphy, a guy, had a really nice pro day about 3-4 weeks ago from Clemson. He's someone I think could go in the teens, but it's I think there's more depth at edge rusher right now, Dave, than you look at it and say, oh, there's a couple freaks here. Good draft for edge rushers, but I think it's more because of the depth.
Great stuff, Big Z. Thank you, buddy. Are you going to be up there? You're not going to Kansas City, I hope.
I'm not going to Kansas City. Yeah, I'll be in Lake Forest. I'm looking forward to it.
Great stuff, Brad.
We'll
thanks.
Talk to you. See you, pal.
Have a great day, guys.
That is our guy.